Ladies and gentlemen, dear colleagues, good morning. I think we don't want to start with a big delay immediately, so if a few colleagues will be late, we will, of course, still let them silently into the room. I would like to warmly welcome you to this special session on the quality assurance underlying the MIP, or macroeconomic imbalance procedure. And there couldn't be a theme that is more relevant for a quality conference than this prime example also of international cooperation and cooperation between the two statistical systems on the National Statistical Institute side and on the National Central Bank side that is suitable for something like this conference. I'm very happy that we have a very interesting panel today here, and we will have three very interesting presentations which will highlight the three key elements, or I cannot say it, the three sides of a medal, but it is something like this. We have the user side represented by our colleague Vito Martins from DG ECFIN. We have the international cooperation side represented by Caroline Willeke from the European Central Bank, who is kindly presenting a joint presentation we have prepared. And we have the producer side represented by our colleague Roger de Burgh, who is working for the Central Bank of Belgium. I will say a few more words about our three distinct speakers in a moment. I'm also very happy to welcome you here to this session, and I'm honored that also Mr. Aurel Schubert is here, who as the general director of the statistics part of the ECB, was very instrumental in developing what we are today presenting here. I would like to start with a few housekeeping issues. So may I kindly ask you to take off your mobile phones, or at least put it on silent so that we are not disturbed by urgent phone calls. I would like to remind our three speakers that you will have 15 to 20 minutes for your presentation, and our kind assistants will give me a sign, Tomasz and Andre will give me a sign when you are at 15 minutes, and I will use this red card to indicate that. So we cannot get away from football in total, but I will use that, and I hope I can make myself clear to the speakers then. I will also suggest that we take the three presentations, because they're really highlighting three parts of the same thing together, and then you will be able to ask questions and to comment. If you don't want to forget your question or your comment, use Twitter to post it in the meantime so that we then can address it afterwards. And again, the kind assistants will collect these Twitter questions and we can then make a selection here to answer them. This is what I wanted to say by introduction on the housekeeping issues. Now let me say a few words about our distinct panel. Ladies first, so I would like to start with Caroline Willeke. Caroline is the Deputy General Director in the Statistics Directorate of the ECB, and she is there, among many other things, responsible for national accounts and balance of payments, the two areas we are trying to jointly quality assure in the macroeconomic imbalance procedure. So as I said before, this will highlight the international joint actions to quality assure the data underlying the MIP. Then Roger de Burgh is advisor to the general director of the Statistic Directorate of the Belgium Central Bank, and he will take care of the producer's side, as he has been involved in producing data underlying the MIP and quality assuring them for Belgium. And last but not least, Vitor, who represents the user side. He is working in DG ECFIN, and there it's maybe also of particular interest that among his many responsibilities, he is also the desk officer for Poland in the MIP. So I'm allowed to say that. Okay. So very relevant also for our Polish colleagues here. All three of them have an economist's background, so but who would be surprised by that, given the responsibilities? With that, I would like to come to our first presentation, and we are starting with the user's perspective. Vito, may I kindly invite you to highlight your thoughts on what we are doing in the framework of the MIP from your user perspective.
Good morning, everyone. I'm very pleased to be here in Krakow. When I was preparing my presentation, we are in this moment of football. I'm coming from Portugal, and I was thinking and connecting with this the quality of statistics. What we expect as a user is to have good data, quality data, and then to do a quality analysis and to have quality decisions. As a Portuguese and in the football, I think we have quality data. We have Cristiano Ronaldo. We were not playing so well in France, and we are not playing so well in Russia. The results were quite amazing. But this is not always the case when we think about the analysis in economics. We need to have quality data to have a quality analysis. And going back to football, now we are still believing in the results, not because we are playing well, but because the Simpsons predicted that the final will be Portugal against Mexico. Let's go to the imbalance, the macroeconomic imbalance procedure. The macroeconomic imbalance procedure is a process of cooperation and coordination of policies that started in 2012. And since then, we were analyzing the 28 economies of the member states. And in this process, we were concluding that some needed more analysis based in the data. And based in that analysis, we concluded that there was an imbalance or not. And at the end of the process, we recommended some actions, some policies to member states. This is just an example that I like to show why we arrived here. This is not the causes of the crisis, but it shows clearly the dimension of the crisis that happened in the world and in Europe in 2007-2008. One of the transmission channels was through trade, and it's quite noticeable the traffic in the Suez Canal and the world GDP were quite affected during that period. Then they recovered, but we are still now recovering from that moment, and several countries are still worse today than they were in 2007-2008. My country, for instance, is now achieving the same level of GDP that it had in 2008. And the coordination of policies done at the European level. We have the monetary policy, we have the economic policy coordination, and the conclusion was at that moment that it was not effective and that we needed more than we had. And that's when the MIP and the other tools appear. So the MIP is integrated here in the six-pack of the that it's a set of laws, of regulations. And the basic here is to coordinate and to anticipate what are the risks, what imbalances are building up, and what should be done. So we are, the macroeconomic imbalance procedure is here among a set of other policies. And this is a procedure that develops in several stages. The first one happens around November every year. So the current one was published in November 2017. It's called the AMR 2018. It's published in 2017 with 2016 data, and it's called 2018. So this, even inside ECFIN, sometimes creates some confusion, at least among newcomers. This the AMR is the Alert Mechanism Report, so it's a report that based in a set of indicators that we call the scoreboard indicators, which have some thresholds and that indicate the countries that perhaps are building some imbalances. This is not an automatic reading. There is not an automatic reading. And then there we have other stages through the year. So the stage two is the IDR, the in-depth review, which is a chapter of analysis that is included in the counter report that is published in February. And based in this report, that in the IDR, we don't conduct IDRs, these in-depth reviews, they are decided in the first stage, in the AMR. In the second stage, we conduct these in-depth reviews. In the case of this year, the set of countries were 12. And in this report, then we conclude in the stage two if the country is facing some imbalance, some excessive imbalance. And in that case, we can go to stage three, where we have two different procedures. The excessive imbalance procedure was never used until now. So we have the preventive action, where we recommend some country-specific recommendations to the member states. So, but all starts with the Alert Mechanism Report that has a set of 14 indicators with several thresholds, plus 28 auxiliary indicators. I'm here today substituting my head of unit also because he is in another meeting with colleagues from Eurostat and the ECB and from member states, in which one of the discussions is to update or to substitute some of the auxiliary indicators due to because they are more relevant in part, and also because we are receiving, and Eurostat and ECB are supplying some new data on some new indicators with the comparability and the quality that is required for our analysis. This is the evolution of the last three AMR reports. So this is a graph taken from the AMR 2018, published in November, showing the number of flashing indicators per flashing countries for each indicator, where you can see some decreasing, fortunately, in the last years. The one that is starting to increase in flashing is the house prices. So now we are facing some house price increases above what we consider the threshold. And but still some debt stocks in private debt, government debt, still several countries flashing with flashing indicators. The case of Poland is the net international investment position that is flashing is only one indicator that was flashing. The My original presentation was, my original version was not for 15 minutes, was like 18 slides following and covering several indicators. So I invite you to download the alert mechanism report of 2018 to check the other indicators and the way the analysis is done. Here I take only one indicator, the house prices, and I want to also to say that we the MIP indicators, the scoreboard indicators, these 14 plus 28 auxiliary indicators is a starting point. But of course, it's not they are not the only indicators that we analyze. And our unit produces a set of tables, graphs, and to support our country desks in ECFIN, and to have an idea, the folder that with all those files and graphs is something like 6,000 files. So dividing by 28 member states plus two aggregates, the euro area plus the EU28, we have many indicators and that support our analysis. And this indicator here shows already not only the question that we try to analyze in the case of house prices is not only if prices are increasing too much, if a bubble is being built. And the question for us, as I suppose you understand, is that if we have a bubble in the housing market, we can have then problems in the banking sector, in private debt, and this can spill over to other countries. For instance, we have here the countries classified according to the not only to the house price increase, but also based in our evaluation in an analysis that is performed inside ECFIN, comparing the actual level of house prices with the what we consider that should be the average, and so we can classify them as being overvalued or undervalued. And it's based in this analysis that then we consider that we need to make a deeper analysis and in this process that goes from November until February, when the country report is published. Some of my colleagues, they will go on mission to member states, and they will meet authorities in the government, in society, and to understand what is behind these numbers, what are the policies that are being developed, and what can be done, or is there an imbalancing being built? I have here an example of the French paragraph in the alert mechanism report, and the conclusion in November 2017 was that in the case of France, the problem was with the public indebtedness, but also the competitiveness and the productivity growth. So the conclusion was that we should monitor the France with a deeper analysis to analyze the progress of these possible imbalances that exist in France. And from the alert mechanism report that is published in November, Then, if it's adopted, we go to the in-depth review, to the country reports. The depth review is a document per se, but in the last years is included inside a document that is called country report. And this IDR, in-depth review, it analyzes not only the country by country, but also the possible spillover of these imbalances to other member states. And of course, several of the analyses that are done are based in tools that are discussed with member states in several committees. I will go faster, otherwise I'll be expelled. I will go here. In the IDR of France, I'm bringing here a case of one of the analyses that is done. And when I started the commission, I also one of my first jobs was also to produce and update a shift share analysis of market shares. And I bring this case also to because it links with the quality of data, and I suppose it was 2015 or 2016, we had a question because we have an indicator in the MIP scoreboard that is the evolution of market shares that we can disaggregate then if this is again inside the EU or outside the EU, and if we are, if a country is gaining market shares because it's more exposed than average to EU or not. And the aggregated figure for it, and it, the case was France, that we can have data from balance of payments data was showing in that case, I suppose, a small increase in market share, and data from trade statistics that we need to make a more disaggregated data analysis to compare sectors like is done here with motor vehicles, aircraft, and so on, was showing a different sign. So, but this happened, this is statistics, and but it created several interactions to try to justify. And meanwhile, we also had to dig in this what was behind the these different sources of statistics, and it's quite amazing sometimes the difference between values now, national accounts and balance of payments is becoming more in line, but there are still several the differences when we try to compare with trade statistics. And for instance, the case of Belgium is also quite striking when we try to compare the evolution of exports of Belgium if based in trade statistics or in balance of payments. Of course, we know we have the national concept, the European concept, the Rotterdam effect, that is the Antwerp effect, in the case of Belgium, affecting the statistics. Okay, I finish here. Do not take it.
Thank you very much, Vitor. And I hope. Sorry. No, I think we take the questions afterwards. Please take your seat. Thank you very much for showing us a little bit of what DG ECFIN is doing with the data which we are producing in the two statistical systems and which are underlying the MIP. I think it was very interesting also to to highlight that this is nothing automatic. So it's not that statisticians produce a number and then a country is in front of the court. Yeah, there is an economic reading, and maybe we can go in the discussion then a little bit deeper into this. And to stay in the football field, thank you for the two passes which you gave to Caroline and to Roger for their talks with your last remarks. Thanks a lot, and please, if you have questions, already put them on Twitter, or don't forget them until the end of our session. Okay. With this, I would like, without further ado, invite Caroline to show how we are jointly assuring the quality underlying the macroeconomic imbalance procedure between the ECB and Eurostat. And this may also be at a point in time to correct something that I forgot at the beginning. I was so excited that I didn't introduce myself, and that's, of course, incredibly impolite. So my name is Silke Stapel-Weber, and I'm at Eurostat as director responsible for, among other things, national accounts, balance of payments, the two statistical areas very relevant for the MIP. Caroline, please, on behalf of the two of us.
Thank you very much, Silke, and good morning to everybody. Being German, I will refrain from any reference to football until later today, hopefully. So, and I also didn't find a good link, I have to admit. But let me first of all thank the organizers of the Quality Conference, so the Polish Statistical Institute and Eurostat. I really think that this Quality Conference every 2 years is a milestone in conferences for everybody who cares about quality in statistics and really covers a very broad range. And I'm also more happy to present now this joint paper of Silke and myself, because it really is about a truly cooperative approach between ECB, Eurostat, but essentially the two systems, so the two pillars Mariana Kotzeva mentioned this morning of European statistics, so the European statistical system and the European system of central banks. So what I will do in the next 15 minutes, I think I can skip the background, so the first part, because of course Vitor motivated very much why we need to care about the quality of the statistics underlying the macroeconomic imbalances procedure. So I will quickly say a couple of words more generally on the quality assurance mechanisms, then present to you the three-level quality framework, also the reporting framework, go then to the memorandum of understanding between Eurostat and the ECB in this context, and will then conclude. Of course, if you think about the indicators that Vitor presented to us that are underlying this important part of EU governance, it's statistics like GDP and its component, house prices, balance of payments, government finance statistics, etc. So these are statistics that are used for many, many purposes. And therefore, I think it's not surprising that for the purpose of the macroeconomic imbalances procedure, we were not reinventing the wheel in order to make sure that these data are of very high quality. So what we do in this context of the MIP is fully nested in the general quality assurance mechanisms that the two systems apply. This morning, we heard already from Mariana Kotzeva and Konrad Pesendorfer a lot about the ESS code of practice and its applications. Maybe for those who are not from the central banking world, it's maybe less well known that also the central banks have an equivalent, namely the ESCB's public commitment, and then, of course, also going in more detail and more practical than a more applied statistical quality framework. And these two quality frameworks are, I think, very, very similar if you look to them. All the three have these three big parts on institutional environment, statistical processes, and output quality, and also the quality dimension, so reliability, timeliness, etc., they are the same. Of course, you will find maybe some differences that have to do with the fact that in the case of the ESS, more surveys and more administrative data are used maybe than in the central banking world, but these are really nuances. So we have this general framework, and in addition, quality is also enshrined in the two statistical framework regulations, so the statistical principles in the Council Regulation 223/2009 for the ESS and 2533/98 for the ESCB. So another, let's say, clear guide to statisticians how much they need to care about these components. And then in addition, for the majority of the domains, so GDP, balance of payments, etc., which are underlying the MIP, we have specific legal provisions. And here again, very often you will find also specific reference to quality assurance and monitoring procedures. So I think all that, of course, we needed to take into account also in the context of MIP. Now, I had a couple of references on the trade-offs between various dimensions of quality, like timeliness and detail, frequency and detail, and reliability and timeliness. I will cut this short because Konrad Pesendörfer was, I think, in a very interesting, excellent way outlining these trade-offs and what, let's say, it means also for different users. But if you think back a second to his concept of statistical utility function, I think, and the different users, of course, the colleagues who are using our statistics to then analyze whether a country is in balance or not, certainly they are not on the quick and dirty side. But I would say probably this utility function also of the average user of official statistics is not yet what the colleagues in ECFIN who care about the six-pack and MIP are looking for, but it even needs to be shifted a little bit and really hinges on the side of having very high accuracy and reliability. So I think that is really what is at stake. And in this particular field, I think we care less about timeliness because this is an exercise that is done in the autumn of each year, not for the running year, but for the year before. Now let me come to this three-level quality framework. In particular, what concerns reporting, this has been worked out very much in cooperation with the Committee on Monetary, Financial, and Balance of Payment Statistics that brings together, let's say, the heads, so to say, of national accounts, balance of payments of NCBs and NSIs, and of course, Eurostat and CECB. Let me start at the bottom. So the first step in this process, or what we then call the level three reports, are self-assessments of the national compilers. And these self-assessment reports, most of them you find on the website of the CMFB, they really go quite in depth on the various dimensions of quality. So they indeed start with the institutional environment. You will find information on statistical processes, but then also a self-assessment really going in depth on output quality dimensions like reliability, like consistency, just to give an example. And certainly for everybody also working with these statistics on a particular country, I think these reports are informative. So not only for us statisticians who then take these reports to then go to the next level, namely the level two. In the level two, what we do is we go domain by domain in assessing the quality and then reporting on it. That means you will find level two quality reports, for example, on balance of payments and the international investment position statistics or on financial account statistics, just to name a few. And they said, on the one hand, we base ourselves on the level three reports, and on the other hand, of course, additional information that we see also when regular compiling the statistics, so what we see from the metadata, then here goes into these reports. And you find there quite a bunch of quality indicators, so we really also assess in a quantitative manner the quality. We compare countries, and then we also aggregate for the euro area. There's now an interesting, just maybe to as an aside, what of course we are also facing now with the, those countries that are particularly honest and diligent in their level three reports, they are probably, they might be those that then we also pick up upon in a level two report. And we saw that a little bit in comments we got. So this is certainly an issue of incentive structure that we still need to tackle. Then based on the level two reports, there is then also a level one report that is part of the autumn, so-called autumn statistical package. So that also goes to the finance ministers and is published in the autumn. And this again summarizes now all the domain-specific reports into one overriding report. And the specific, let's say, characteristic of this level one report is that it's really in its language, also in the focus targeted to policymakers and also to the public at large. And I think, indeed, it's really also quite an interesting reading from year to year to see a bit how the focus changes. Now, why did we need a memorandum of understanding between Eurostat and the ECB DG Statistics in this area? I think it's quite clear if you think about the Commission being the institution that is in charge of carrying out the, let's say, the macroeconomic imbalances procedure that needs to then assess countries, see whether they are below the threshold or above, to assess whether they go in in-depth review or not. So it's very clear this needs to be statistics of extremely high quality. And part of these statistics are compiled by central banks. And I think here it's somehow clear that one wants to agree, find an agreement, a practical arrangement on how to go about that. So in November 2016, the two institutions signed this memorandum of understanding on the quality assurance of MIP-related statistics. And as part of it, there were also two letters, so to say, exchanged between the commissioner in charge of statistics of the commission and the ECB board member in charge of statistics, really recognizing the two quality frameworks. Now, of course, at the technical level, we were always aware that our quality frameworks are very similar, all of high quality, but this had never been made really officially recognized. So already that was, I think, more as a signal, a big step ahead. Now, the memorandum of understanding, of course, only covers part of the indicators that go in the MIP, namely balance of payments, the international investment position, and financial accounts, simply because these are the domains where the ESCB and the ESS have joint responsibility. So we are building here also on, of course, previous cooperation already in these fields. And as said, if you go to either the website of Eurostat or our website or the CMFB, you will find the memorandum of understanding and you will find relatively practical working arrangements for the cooperation in this process. And particular when these statistics are compiled by national central banks in their capacity as members of the ESCB. So in these cases, DGS of the ECB quality assures the data according to the public commitment. So what does that mean, let's say, in real life? So last year was essentially the first year where we were applying the memorandum of understanding. It starts very practically with some pre-work in the later spring, where Eurostat and the ECB compare the data they have on balance of payments or financial accounts in their system, because it's, you would think that these data should be the same if they cover the same countries, the same statistical areas, but of course that's not always the case, sometimes for very, let's say, practical reasons, sometimes there's a mistake, or you become aware that maybe there are also more conceptual reasons behind. And then officially, the exercise starts usually in October when DG Statistics provides the quality assured that data and metadata to the colleagues in Eurostat. And here we also give in particular information on big revisions or big events that need to be taken into account when then finally the colleagues in ECFIN are analyzing these data. And of course, it's not that we ECB magically have the data, but all that is reported to us by the colleagues from the NCBs, and I think Roger will give you a bit more flavor on how it feels, so to say, from the national perspective. Then also part of the memorandum of understanding is the reporting, and I mentioned the level 1, 2, 3 report. And on the level 2, for example, on balance of payments, we have both a report by Eurostat and one by the ECB. And this also has, this cannot be merged because we have two governance structures and we have different bodies approving these reports. But still, of course, on the one hand, the national institutions, but also the users of the reports, so the economists can expect that if we talk about the same statistics, the same year, that we don't come to completely different conclusions or apply different indicators. And indeed, under the guidance of the CMFB, we have been harmonizing the reports, and now in the area of balance of payments, I think we go very far in really also having the same key messages. And as a next step, so this is all following a very, let's say, specific timetable. In the beginning, needs to be very quick. The colleagues in Eurostat only have a day or two to see whether our data are okay for them or whether there are additional questions that we need to go back to NCBs. But in the medium to longer term, we also jointly want to move forwards with, let's say, to improve further the quality, and for that, also, the two European institutions with the national responsible institutions are working together. And one means to do this, apart, of course, from desktop analysis, is also that we are now doing visits to the countries. We had last year two pilot visits to try out the procedures, and we're very grateful, on the one hand, to Roger and his colleagues in Belgium that we could go there, and on the other hand, to our Greek colleagues, and based on that, we worked out also terms of reference so that everybody, every party knows exactly what to expect in practical terms. So we will have then our first more official visits very soon, namely early next week, we go to Luxembourg, and then later this year actually to Poland. Let me now conclude. So the use of official statistics for MIP purposes, in particular because we are in a framework where numerical thresholds are being applied, has further concentrated the attention of users on the quality of the underlying statistics. We frame our MIP quality system in the existing quality frameworks and have developed then the three-level bottom-up framework. And all that, I think, we do, and we really, both institutions, aim to do that in excellent cooperation, and maybe not because we like, of course, we also like to cooperate, but that is not the final purpose. Really, it's about bringing the best product to the users, and users don't care whether the data comes from the one or other source, but about having the best they can get. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Caroline, for the excellent overview how this quality assurance actually works in practice and how we, over the last 2 to 3 years, have worked out this system, this multi-layered approach, and how we have also strengthened the cooperation by means of working out a memorandum of understanding and now also very concrete terms of reference for the MIP visits. And Caroline already gave the kind invitation to Roger to highlight a little bit how this feels at national level. And I may also extend this invitation to invite Roger maybe to share with us also a little bit how he sees this developing. from the point of view of a producer of those statistics. Roger, please.
Yes, thank you. I wish also welcome to wish you welcome and to thank you to be so generous for this session. Now, as Caroline said, it's not to be understood that we were a bad pupil because we were in the first visits, but it's not at all that, but we had, I have to admit, we had some problems. And those problems will be illustrated here with starting for with two major statistics that are part of the MIP process. I will give an overview of the different steps on the process and also of the outcome, trying to be as brief as possible because there are some aspects that may be complex in this process. Now, the starting point was that the finding that the spread between the international investment position and our financial accounts had a fundamental trend to grow and also was somewhat volatile. This situation triggered the decision to start a process of reconciliation between the both statistics. Now, it's illustrated also maybe as the Belgian team to remain in the sphere of the World Cup. We have almost the best players in the world, but they have to learn to play as a team. And I think for statisticians, sometimes it's the same major challenge. Because you have to be aware that both statistics were the result of two independent systems in our institution, with own sources, some common sources, but also own sources, own methodology, own processes. So I will just illustrate the evolution here of the IP process. So till 2008, the international investment position was the result of a process of accumulation of flows coming from the international transaction reporting system developed for balance of payments since many, many years. So it was accumulation of flow plus some adjustment for exchange rates evolution and for prices. And then in 2008, as a consequence of the shift from a data collection system for balance of payments purposes from the ITRS to a survey-based systems, we included also surveys on actual stocks on positions in the different financial assets and liabilities. And so the IP could use from 2008 on those real stocks in their process. Now the financial accounts also were previously using the flows plus different sources and methods and maintained this approach longer than the IP. They only shifted after 2010 using then also the stock data that were collected. Now indeed the main objective was to guarantee a better coherence, not necessarily a full coherence between both statistics. And the starting situation you can see here, was not dramatic, but was serious, because in fact we had on an average on the period 2010-2015, a gap of almost 9% of the GDP. That means that we were around, in average, a 30 billion euro has a gap between both net positions. Now, how to organize this work, the process of reconciliation? The idea was indeed to imply all stakeholders. And so, in fact, we implied different statistical areas. So external statistics, indeed, for the IP, because the starting point was the IP revision. The financial accounts and the national accounts. We also invited to participate in the work a specific provider for financial assets and liabilities for the financial sector are the supervisory units that we have in the central bank and that covers the banks and the insurances. And we also finally implicated our users, that means our research department of the bank. Now, with all these stakeholders, it was decided to create a dedicated multidisciplinary task force, regrouping representatives from all these areas and with, as a chair, the head of the external statistics unit. The mandate covered indeed the analysis and the validation of the possible methodological changes and the approval of the calendar for publication of the adjusted figures. So it started from the existing methods, try to see if those methods work or could be maintained or not, and so if necessary to switch to other methods. So the fact that having this task force also guaranteed a full transparency of the process for all stakeholders. Finally, the work was performed over a period from December 2016 to June 2017, and the task force organized, in fact, 6 meetings and produced 3 main documents, one related to the description of the existing sources and methods. An evaluation of those methods and of the processes into place was the second document, main document, and the final main document was the proposal and estimation of the adjustments and revisions. So, about the revisions, sorry, I took the wrong key. So, about the revision, we considered, in fact, 4 types of revision. The first one was concerning the methodological aspects and looked into the implementation in both statistics of the methodological standards and guidelines to identify the difference between the two statistics and the drawbacks of both statistics. And so, as a result, to identify the necessary adjustments. The second one concerned changes in procedures and processes. For instance, there was included the use of new data sources or the development and future use of new statistical methods. The third one was trying to cover the non-response. Now, the non-response in the financial area is maybe a little more difficult than in the real economy, due to sometimes the high volatility of the instruments. Despite that, we succeeded to implement some simple methods for some components, especially in FDI and in other investments. And then, yes, we also took on board the simple correction of errors that was in fact identified in the whole process of analysis. So the adjustment indeed cover all components of the IP. So I will start with the foreign direct investment component because it was the one that was the most impacted by the whole process. So we had there 2 main adjustments to be introduced. First, a better registration of assets and liabilities against a specific type of entity in the Netherlands, that is called Stichting Administratiekantoor in Dutch. It's a lookalike trust, in fact, system. The second adjustment is the correct valuation of listed companies. Then the third one was an ad hoc valuation of non-listed companies in specific constructions of relationship, triggering major imbalances in the IIP or the financial accounts. And finally, a little bit a surprise, the suppression of double countings that we discovered in FDI and other investment for commercial receivables and debts. So maybe I will not go too much in detail here in the presentation because that will take a lot of time on this issue on stacks. But in fact, those kind of entities allow an investor to locate in a third country an investment in the same country as the investor for different reasons. Mostly there are fiscal reasons behind it, but okay. And in fact, this scheme illustrates the simple way that you have a Belgian entity using such an entity to fully locate its ownership in another Belgian entity. And the fact was that the two statistics registered that in a different way. In the IP, we apply the principle that was normally recognized in FDI to neutralize home loops. Because in fact, this kind of investment is a real resident investment. It's a Belgian entity investment, investing in fact in another Belgian entity. Now in the financial accounts, they applied in fact the first counterpart rule and took on board only the liability side, because most of the cases the investment is in the Dutch entity is made by individuals, and we do not cover or have difficulties to cover individuals there. So the adjustment was finally to align on the rule of first counterpart, and so that the adjustment had to be made on both sides, mostly on the IP, mostly on one side in the financial accounts. So the scheme can be complete, and that was also the case in Belgium with the presence of a non-resident investor using the same entity in the Netherlands to locate his contribution to the investment. So that illustrates this case, the result being the same. The first counterpart was the reference rule taken on board for the changes. Then the other adjustment that were produced is first of all a correct valuation at market value as required by the international standards of the equity capital of listed companies. Indeed, in the IP previously, this component was valuated at book value of own funds, and where the financial accounts were already using the market value. So the IP shifted from own funds book value to market value. The second point, and that's a specific situation, is that normally the international standards recommend that equity capital of non-listed companies may be booked at own funds at book value. Nevertheless, in some constructions, in some structures of investment, you have the situation that you have an asymmetry for your country, that in fact you have a unit in your country that is a listed company, and in fact an asset that is on the counterpart on a non-listed company. So you have there an imbalance, and it was decided to move to a more balanced approach in this situation by using a ratio of to value the asset side of the on the non-listed company at a kind of market value, using a ratio relating the market value and the book value of the own funds of the listed company. So this was a kind of adjustment to make, to suppress or at least to reduce those imbalances. Finally, the practice of the use of different surveys had as a result that for receivables and commercial receivables and debts, we had a double registration, one in the FDI surveys when it was assets and liability between related companies, and one in a general survey we had for all companies. And so it was decided for practical reasons to drop the registration in the FDI component presently. Now the second functional classification where there were a lot of improvement to be made was the portfolio investment. So the first adjustment consisted in the use of a new method of measuring the liabilities. So, red card almost. So there indeed, there was a different method applied there in the IP and in the financial accounts. In the IP, we had, in fact, information collected via a limited survey. The financial accounts applied a method that we took over then, that it was decided to take over in the IP. And this method is the method called residual method, where you calculate the liability vis-a-vis abroad, making the difference between the issued amount and ownership by residence. Then the second adjustment was to improve the asset side on the portfolio by making use of the data now provided by a new system of data collection developed in the SCB, the Security Holding Statistics, where we could benefit from the third-party reporting, so the deposits with foreign bank by residence, to increase the coverage of our asset side. Then in other investment, there were also a few adjustments, and the major one, I would say, is an expanded use of the data of the Bank for International Settlements, where we use it originally for the deposit side for households. We expanded it to cover also the non-financial sector and also for the liabilities using due to a further expansion of this kind of data, to use it also for the data from loans from foreign banks to resident companies. So there was there the possibility to improve a lot those elements in the other investments. Now, the final impact is indeed not a reduction to zero. So the impact for the IP, I illustrate here the impact for the IP components is indeed, and you can see all the adjustments, if you look to them theoretically, you will come to this conclusion, that there is an increase of the assets and the liabilities of the IP, but in an asymmetric way, reducing the net position, and so reducing also the gap vis-a-vis the financial accounts. So the average on the period was reduced to a little bit more than 4%. It was also that, for instance, for 2014 and 2015, the gap was even reduced to up to 3%, coming from gaps above 10%. Now, the publication of these figures were done in a first stage last September for the period 2014-2016, and the back data are planned by my colleagues to be published next year. Now, the work is not over. There is way forward, because as you see, with 4%, as a gap of 4%, even if it is 2 or 3%, can be further maybe reduced, so we will focus further on the remaining differences. And we will also try to implement a monitoring process to be sure that the things are going smoothly between the two statistics. Now, if I could give my few reflections quickly. Yes, as a producer, maybe facing the evolution, I think I can understand the process of the MIP, because it's an essential element in a more broader political process. So that's indeed, and quality, as was said in the plenary session, is an essential element for us. Now, what is happening for the producer is that we see that we move from what we can call an internal quality analysis to an external quality analysis, where in fact, instead to analyze the quality inside the statistic itself, it's done by comparison from statistic to statistics where the components are supposed to be equal. And that has indeed repercussions in some processes. Also, the fact that there is more and more detailed requirements can increase the risk that also you may increase the distortions at the level of the details. So that means that we fear that in fact we will be confronted as producers vis-à-vis a number of distortions that will be higher than the one that we are now facing working with aggregates. Also, the shift that we fully support to the more and more use of microdata has the same kind of implication potentially, because also it will trigger inconsistency with the system where you collect aggregates. And that's an issue to be solved in between, as long as both are in fact available in parallel. So all this evolution for me, and that's my personal view, will have a great impact on the way of working and will probably also necessarily impact the internal organization of statistical authorities in a way to face all these evolutions and to be able also to give the answers to the question that would be inevitably addressed to us. Now, personally also, I think, but it was already said, in fact, in the plenary session of this morning, we are also facing a major challenge, that is that we are working more and more with moving targets, certainly at the level of data collection, looking to multinational enterprises. They move so quick that indeed your systems have difficulties to follow. And with this, in that prospect, I would say that it is essential, it was said also, I think, this morning, that we clearly define what we want to measure and how to measure it. And not to say, okay, we will try to measure everything, and then the result could be that we try to measure everything, but nothing will be perfectly measured, is to say, to go to something that is much better defined as an objective to be measured. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Roger, for your insights from the producer's perspective. And I think you illustrated very, very well what it actually means on the ground to quality assure these figures. And it is easy to say in a report, oh, there's a 9% discrepancy between financial accounts and IIP, and you could get an idea what it actually means to halve that, and that's already a big success. And there was also at the end another thing that I found important, because you said the back data will come. So it's not only about 1 year, it's about consistency, because users need a time series, because otherwise Vitor would scream and and his colleagues if it is only for 1 year. And thank you very much also for your reflections. With that, you actually opened already the discussion, because I would surely not have let you off the lock with this question. With this, I would like to open the floor for reflections from your side, for questions to our speakers, and if somebody could give me the Twitter account, if there are any questions have come in, that would also be... No, we are not that modern here. Okay, good. Then please, questions, reflections from your side, and I understand that microphones will be given to you so that you can speak from the... Roger,
since we compare POP statistics here and trade statistics, and that has been mentioned in Vito's presentation, we compare different methodologies nowadays, and that can be quite tricky, because when you have an exporting goods, in trade statistics, we do not apply this change of ownership principle as we apply in BPM 6. And that could create, particularly in specific countries like Belgium, Luxembourg, Czech Republic, differences due to merchanting, where a resident trades, is sitting in the country, but does not trade really goods that enter the territory of the country, of the compiling economy. In such cases, and that apparently that could be the case in Belgium, the methodologies play a trick against us when we derive political consequences from the data. So my question here, concrete to Vito, did you consider these merchanting, so-called merchanting effects in the trading goods statistics when you compared this with the data from BOP statistics?
Thank you very much. I would suggest we collect a range of questions and then we, Aurel, you wanted to intervene?
No, thank you very much, and thanks for the presentations. Now, my question is to Vitor, so a little bit about the analytical part of the use of the data, but it also relates to the relevance of the data. I mean, as you showed us here, for instance, in the case of France, you looked at the sectoral picture, and you showed, for instance, you know, the airline or airspace industry, where it moved from 100 to like 150. So it looks like enormous success story for French exports. But my question is how much interaction you have in the analytical part and the assessment part with the statisticians, because at least my guess is since Airbus is in Toulouse and the final leg of Airbus exports is in France, it looks like there's an enormous success of the French industries, but I don't know, 90% of the plane comes from the rest of Europe, and so it's only then goes south through French exports. So in terms of relevance of data, once you look at that, and all these kind of things, then there is any interaction with the statistical producers, or are you more working then simply on the basis of the data in ECFIN when you do this assessment process? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Further questions? The gentleman on the top, please.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the excellent presentation. My question is inspired by the first one, Vitorian. I'd like to ask all of you about the possibility to change not only the auxiliary indicators in the MIP framework, but also the main one, as to my understanding, some of them sometimes give us a wrong signal. The IIP can be an example when we have 15 or 16 countries exceeding the threshold, whereas there is an assessment from the Commission that there is no underlying imbalances in this case. So what's your opinion about that and the possibility and the need to change the IIP indicators? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Further questions? Lady, please, in the middle.
So I'm afraid my question goes also to Victor. It's a little bit in line with the other colleagues. The idea is now, as you said, there is discussions about reviewing the auxiliary indicators. Here I have also a plea that, and it's also consistent with what has been said this morning, we should go for clear, transparent data. It should be the same with the indicators. It should be something simple, sound, available, understandable by everybody, not only by a few economists or statisticians. So once said that, the issue is also, I have heard that It's been discussed to also include or to calculate the indicators for the euro area and the European Union aggregates. So if you include that, I think this will be this will be very obvious, especially when you are talking about external imbalances. When we are talking about the currency union like the euro area, or we talk about the European Union, it's not exactly the same to have an imbalance with colleagues that have the same currency, with countries that have the same currency, that with countries that are outside the euro area or the European Union. Should we consider that as auxiliary indicators, so to have more information, as Jesse said, about the net IIP is not the same to have a big net IIP against other euro area countries or outside.
Okay, thank you very much. I don't see any further need to intervene for the time being. Then I really would like to give these questions back also to all three speakers, even if Vito has been incredibly popular in the questions. I would like also to add from my side a question to Caroline and to Roger, because mine to Vito has already been asked from the floor, so that was very helpful. Caroline, we have set up jointly this well-developed system with rules and so on, but could you actually tell us a little bit what are the practical outcomes of the quality assurance process? Where is, can we see the progress that is made with such a system in place? And for Roger, really I would like that you maybe go a little bit more into detail. You already said something about what it means at the national level, but how could we as the two custodian or international organizations make it more useful for you so that it is really a win-win situation and not an auditor coming to look at the data. So that I would like to give the floor to each of our speakers to come back in 2 or 3 minutes to the questions that were raised. And Vito, would you like to start, please?
I think the first question was about this the trade data on the case of merchanting data. This question I raised it. It was two or three years ago, and at that moment we were still facing another transition in data that was from BPM5 to BPM6, where this was not the merchanting was not the main case, and the case of it started with the case of France with because the difference in data implied a difference in signal. In one case, it was not the dimension of the value of exports. In this case, it was com trade versus balance of payments and national accounts. Through this this starting point, several things happen. And the trade statistics was not only used in this shift share analysis, but also in quality of exports. And these analytical tools, they are presented to some committees, some working groups. One of them we call it LIME, the other is the EPC that is happening today. And from the Belgium delegate in in one of these committees, the main reason for the case of Belgium was that it was not merchanting, was the presence of external companies, multinational companies dealing in the market of oil, that importing a lot of oil to Belgium and re-exporting. So the re-exports is an issue that I have not found a solution. So if there is, and I would appreciate. It makes me remember another question, and it relates very much with the topic of the conference, with quality. One of the characteristics is timeliness, and one of the discussions last 2 or 3 weeks ago, again in the related with in the trade data, was which database to use, and we have at the disaggregated level several possible sources. We have Comtrade from the United Nations, with the big advantage that includes all countries as reporters of data. Then we have another possibility that builds their database on this Comtrade data, that is the French CEPI. And we have COMEXT. And sometimes several issues. The CEPI, one of my colleagues was presenting me CEPI as an advantage because it has the data, the bilateral data already, but after some analysis, the consistency between the exporter and the importer, which if you go to the Comtrade and Comext, you will find that the aerospace or the vehicles exports from one country to the other, when they are from the exporter side, it's one value, and from the importer side, it can be a very different value. And CEPI has this advantage. They apply some methodology, and they have this consistency between this mirror. But the problem was with the timeliness. So we the alert mechanism report is in November, and the counter report is in February next year, and CEPI data is available to analyze, for instance, 2017 data. It will be available in February or March of 2019. So it will not be available at time for an analysis with a policy perspective, because there is a big difference in making analysis with a policy perspective, trying to get the policy messages or policy implications of the analysis, or if you are just doing an analysis with no policy implications, and then you can, if you are missing the last year of data or the last 2 years, is not a problem. Here it is. About the headline and the auxiliary indicators, one of the discussions to the last month is about replacing some auxiliary indicators by new ones. There is a policy about this, the indicators, that the objective is not to increase the number of indicators. So these 14 headline indicators and the 28 auxiliary indicators, the last in the last meetings, the conclusion was, let's not increase the number of indicators. So if there are new indicators, we will need to find some candidates to be replaced or improved. And in this regard, that we, I think, is also interesting, because we have one of the new indicators will be, for instance, the non-performing loans in gross. And some the delegates of several member states were proposing to the non-performing loans in net to be used. The question is, data is not comparable. Now, it's expected that in several in some years, with a new directive from the Commission about this issue, we will have comparable data on non-performing loans in net. The headline indicators is more political. The substitution or the number of indicators to include, and I suppose they are much more stable.
I'm sorry, I know it's interesting. May I suggest that some of these questions could also bilaterally be discussed afterwards, because in about 20 minutes the next section starts here. But I want to give at least 1 minute to each of my two other presenters. Roger, if you would like.
Yes, thank you. Maybe on the first question, maybe to add to the explanation, indeed, the reference to Belgium is a correct one. In that sense that indeed we have a phenomenon in Belgium that impact the two ways that statistics on trade are produced, for trade statistics and for balance of payments. And in fact that it's linked to the port of Antwerp, it's one of the biggest ports in Europe, and is mainly there is a great use of this port to in fact introduce goods in Europe, and so there is a process made by non-residents or representatives of non-residents in our country to do this, to regulate, to monitor those flows. And that means that the two concepts then that we have, the community concepts that is used for the European statistics, and the national concept that is used in balance of payments for national purposes, may indeed differ a lot. Also, there is an impact on part of those kind of transactions where the goods are only, I would say, channeled via Belgium, is that the income price and the outgoing price is different. With or without some interventions. So that is also a phenomenon that impact not only the gross flows, but also the net figure of the trade. So maybe on your question, how can be the process helpful for member states, the MIP process? I think our first experience, I would say, was relatively positive, but I think it's essential that the whole process is well documented, well organized, and is a fully interactive process. I think we experience in that way. I would say the timing could improve of the availability of some steps in the process, and I think there is already an adjustment made on this kind of calendar. And then, yes, the formulation of recommendations. So there are indeed inevitably some outcome of this kind of process, some drawbacks identified or some problems identified. It's that they indeed would be translated in recommendation. And there would maybe to try to have also in common a real plan, action plan. I think that we did not really make an action plan. As such, we had a list of recommendations, but not really an action plan. I think where then we can prioritize the different elements in function of different criteria. The amount implied or the importance of the component itself and so on. I think maybe there are some aspects that could be better articulated, but I think the process is well started. And I would say the essential element is that it is a common and interactive process that is needed.
Thank you very much, Roger. So, Caroline, the last 20 words of this session.
Yes, I think Roger already mentioned the follow-up that we give to the visits in terms of recommendation or action. So that is then, of course, very specific to a particular country. But that's not the only follow-up we see of the quality work. I think another one also has to do with the domain-specific quality reports. If you go, for example, to the quality report on balance of payments, you find a table with recommendations. Part of the recommendations are on specific countries, also with, let's say, with a deadline. Of course, the countries are asked to have the opportunity to comment on it, so it's not unilaterally given. But there are also follow-up actions that the relevant working groups are taking up, because many issues, let's take in the area of financial accounts, the undercoverage of certain sectors of other financial intermediaries, they are not country-specific, but they are more or less an issue or a difficulty for each or most of the countries. So then we take this up jointly in order to see how to best make progress over the coming years. And with that, I can stop here. Yeah.
Thank you very much. And I would like to say thank you also to the colleagues in the audience for the rich discussion. And before I'm not anymore in between you and your lunch, I would like first to invite you to give a big applause to our three presenters. And now Tomasz has the last word for some housekeeping issues.
Thank you very much for a very good session. When leaving, please check all your belongings are with you, yes, because, and you are very welcome to a lunch, which is on the first floor. That's all. Thank you very much.
Zdałem się zawiesił tutaj i nie wiem. Tak, właśnie ona chyba go musiała wyłączyć, bo się nic nie da zrobić. O dobra, wróciło, super.